Krista Parivani. Mm-hmm. So tell me about the title of the book. Where does that single word, her, come from for you?
The title of the book is actually the title of a manuscript that my sister had written for her MFA thesis at UMass Amherst. It was a novel that she'd written that she called Her, and it was the story of identical twins, Esther and Elsie. But, you know, it was really our story, it just with their names.
It's a story that you're not likely to forget very easily, isn't it?
The story of Her?
The story that she wrote, it's a story that that has some meaning for you.
Yeah, I mean, she actually dedicated that manuscript to me. And I had really wanted to share this book with her. I really felt that my sister was a collaborator in the writing of Her. And she wasn't quite enough of a collaborator that I could put her name on the front cover of this book. But when it came time to title it, I had considered using the title Kindred, which was the title for a series of photographs that I'd made of my sister. And her story of Esther and Elsie resonated with me so deeply. And it really told the story of our lives together as girls that I couldn't think of a better tribute to my sister than to title this book Her, after her novel.
This is a story. It's a memoir of your whole lives together and later apart. You had a pretty rough childhood, the two of you, didn't you?
We did. We grew up in a very turbulent home. My mother and father were divorced when I was very young, and he was abusive to us and my mother, and she remarried a Marine, and we moved a lot as a result. We lived on military bases, and we were changing schools always, and our twinship really offered us a kind of protection from that turbulence, if you will. It was a cloak we wore. I think we, you know, we were able to come up and out of our family more easily because we had one another to protect each other.
There was so little love coming from the outside that the two of you, I guess, in some ways increased the love you had for each other.
We did. We really magnified it. We grew up in an Italian family, and we knew from watching the others that you need love to grow. And we wrote stories together. We wrote songs together. We sat with one another at lunch every day, and we tried our best to create our own world, one that we didn't really need our parents. And I think a lot of twins do that in a way, because that relationship is so primarily important to identical twins specifically.
Did you think when you were young about the possibility of not being together?
I never did. And I don't think Kara did either. It wasn't until we were older and we'd really been sort of separated by an event that happened in my sister's life. She was raped by a stranger while she was walking her dog in the woods during her first year of graduate school. And at that moment, we'd felt that we'd been untwinned, and mortality was a real question at that point. And one, you know, my sister really felt that she hadn't escaped that attack. My sister really felt that she hadn't survived that attack. And in a way, I think part of her felt as if she had left who she was on the forest floor that day.
That rape is something that you both had to deal with. There's no getting around it. The two of you were so, so very close that, there's a hint at it earlier in the book. You talk about how people used to say to you that they always wanted to be a twin.
Mm-hmm.
And your response to that was what? Cut yourself in half, we would tell people?
Yeah, cut yourself in half and see how it feels. And actually, my sister wrote that part of the book. That's quoted directly from her manuscript, Her. And that was really the answer to that question. We felt lucky to have one another, but we felt very worried that one day we wouldn't have one another. But we really didn't start talking about that until we were younger adults in our 20s, and it seemed like a real possibility that we might be separated by death. That was always on our minds.
It wasn't until the rape, then, that
really
you began to look at it?
It really wasn't until the rape, no. My sister suffered very deeply from depression after the rape, and she went on really a kind of suicidal mission with drugs. She couldn't rescue herself from the pain and the trauma of her rape, and she began self-medicating, first with benzodiazepines and then with heroin. And it was very obvious to both of us that the path was not going to end in a good place for her if she didn't stop taking those drugs, and she refused.
One of the difficulties that you faced, and that's clear in the way you've written this book, is that it's hard for you to be both here after she's gone and still feeling so much of the life the two of you had together before she died. It's heartbreaking to hear you so clearly in your writing talk about still being a twin, even though you use the phrase untwinned as a part of the rape.
That was something about losing my sister that was very unexpected to me. It was as if I didn't know who I was after she died, as if I had sort of been cut in half, if you will. And I went to the mirror after she died, and I looked at myself, and I saw her. And during our lives together, we were always trying to differentiate from one another. Identical twins will find the smallest things that are different and kind of go with those. But as I was looking at myself in the mirror, she was really staring right back at me. And I was faced then at that moment with realizing that I was a twin, but I wasn't a twin. And I wasn't sure how I was going to navigate that as I went along in my life, because my sister really did feel like the most important part of me. It was sort of like what people describe when they've lost a limb, the phantom limb syndrome, where you have this appendage and you can't see it, but you can feel it. And for me, losing my sister was sort of like having a phantom twin, where I couldn't see her, but I could feel her very acutely next to me, and I couldn't put my hands on her. And it really was sort of the biggest loss that I think I could have endured at that moment in my life.
But you could see her in some ways. You'd look in the mirror and you would see, obviously, someone who looked very much like her. But it sounds as though you began to see her and not you in the mirror at that point. The tattoos that she had, the marks that she had, mm-hmm. the scar on her face that you knew was not yours, but you could see?
Yes, that's exactly right. I could see her on me, but this other thing was happening too, where she wasn't quite herself on me, and I wasn't myself in me either. It was sort of this melding of both of us, the worst of us in a way. And I saw my sister's destructive qualities on me, her tattoos, her piercings, her imperfections. And it was that kind of frightened me, because things didn't end well for her, and I wondered, as I stared at myself, how they were going to end for me.
It had to have worried you, because when she was raped, I know it's hard, but it wasn't an easy rape, if such a thing is even possible to imagine. It was a vicious, brutal beating that she took. It must have felt, because she was so much a part of you, like it happened to you to some extent.
It really did. And, you know, if I'm honest with myself, it still feels that way. I think a lot about what happened to my sister that day. And it's not a memory that I have because she told me about it and that resonated with me. It's a memory that I have because I created it for myself in a way that I created a lot of the memories that we shared. And I would never dare say that her rape happened to me, because it certainly didn't, but it lives on in me and in my memory in a way that is so deeply embedded that I can't really live without that. I bring it into my home.
Did she talk to you about it? Was she able to talk to you about it?
She was able to talk to me about it, and something really magical happened to me while I was writing this book, actually. I had tried to write the story of my sister's rape for about 6 weeks, and I couldn't do it. It was very close to fiction for me, and it felt uncomfortable as I was writing. I wanted to write a memoir. And really, I felt at that moment that I was going to have to give up writing the book. And I went to visit my mother one weekend, and I went up to my sister's bedroom, and I had wanted to spend some time with her things. I sat on the floor, and I looked under the bed, and there was this giant Tupperware container filled with journals that I'd never seen, and I opened one up, and inside of it was my sister's account of the rape, and she'd written it for the police, I think. There was a little legal document inside of the front flap, and she'd never told me the story like that, and she tells the reader exactly what happened to her in the book because it's exactly the account of her rape that I was able to use here. And maybe I didn't know in life, but I definitely know now what happened that day.
Is it better, actually, to know, or was your imagining even worse than the reality?
It was much better to know. It was better for me at the end, looking at the end of this process of writing the book, to be able to know my sister in the way that she had so needed me to know her. I felt, when I lost her, that I would never be able to reconcile all of our differences, and really the wedge that was put between us with drugs and with the attack that she suffered. And I really did find that at the end of writing this book that I was closer to her in a way that I had never been while she was alive. And I also found that the nearer I came to Kara in writing this book, the farther away she was from me in my regular life. So I did take on some of her more destructive qualities when she died. It wasn't just her image that I saw in the mirror. I was also replicating some of the drug use and the infidelity that she had acted out in her marriage. I replicated that in the one that I had. And this book really saved me from that kind of life because I was able to find my sister in writing, and I could never, in a way that I could never find her outside of the book.
I keep thinking of that sentence that the moment my sister fell under her rapist's hand, he untwined us. This book, in some ways, is your, it sounds like, successful effort to twin her again.
I think so, too. Although when I began the book, I couldn't think of it that way, you know. When we were little girls, we were very competitive. I wore pink and Kara wore blue. I ate chocolate ice cream and Kara ate vanilla ice cream. And those were the lines we followed, you know, because the world wasn't really big enough for both of us to have what we felt that we'd wanted. And we'd both really wanted to be writers. And so when we'd started college and we discovered that we both wanted to be writers, it was just not going to happen. So I soon I gave writing to my sister and decided to take photographs, and
But now you've begun to take writing back for her or for you?
I have taken writing back, and first I took writing back for her, and then it was for me. And the more that I wrote this book, the more I realized it was definitely for me and not for her. And I'm glad the book exists because I really do feel that my sister was such a beautiful person that other people need to know her too.
There's also a sense in the book that she began to recognize, even though she apparently knew that there wasn't much of a future for her, that she could find a future in you. I mean, there's a very touching scene in the book when you take Kara back to her apartment and she asks you to give her a bath. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I certainly do. My sister, and this, it still baffles me, actually, because she'd felt so distanced from me after the rape, but my sister asked me to bathe her after she was attacked, and we went into her bathroom together, and she undressed, and she pulled me with her into the tub fully clothed, and I washed her back and the marks that the assailant left with his teeth, and it was a hard moment for me.
I can imagine. I must have been, again, because she's so much you. Did you worry about that? You wrote that you were worried the rapist might see you and think you were Kara?
Yeah, I had gone shopping, grocery shopping for my sister after she was raped, and there was about a 5-day period where her rapist hadn't yet been arrested. The police were still investigating the situation. They knew who he was, but they didn't necessarily have enough to detain him. And I'd gone out grocery shopping for Kara, and I had gone to the same store that I knew that he had shopped in. And I realized, as I was shopping that he would definitely know who I was, but there was no way that I was going to know who he was, and that I was putting myself at risk at that moment. And there was a sort of thrill in that, too, and that seems kind of extreme to say, but maybe for a moment I wanted to be able to know what my sister had experienced, and I put myself in harm's way because of that.
It was a relief, certainly for you, when he was eventually arrested. Was it for Kara as well, or was it still difficult for her, no matter what?
I think the moment that he was sentenced to prison was the moment that she was relieved, that she wouldn't have to see him ever again. I think that having to face him in the courtroom was something that she really dreaded, and she really handled it with a poise and grace that I admire. She was able to tell the story to the jury of what happened that day, and she'd convinced them that he should go away for many lifetimes. I think that they sentenced him to 133 years, and my sister said to them that the day that he had attacked her was the day that all of the flowers had died, which is really a perfect way to explain how my sister was in the world. She appreciated all that was beautiful, and he took that from her.
One of the things that's interesting about that is that it's an indication you both tend to think in images. You talked about both being writers. One of the ways you coped with that was to become a photographer, and so you worked on images in different forms, didn't you?
We did, and we also collaborated that way. I photographed Kara after the rape because she was afraid to go outdoors, and we agreed that she would come out into the forest and be photographed with me if she could write about those photographs. So we had a collaboration together that lasted for about 5 years, where I would photograph us in these long black cloaks that actually covered my sister's pajamas, because during those years it had been very hard for her to motivate herself to get dressed. And I think also those photographs were a springboard to bring my sister back into the life of writing that she loved.
The photograph on the cover of the book, is that one of those from your series called Kindred?
It is, yes. Yes.
It's startling that you are very different on the cover of the book, and yet so much the same that it...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my sister is not meeting the gaze of the camera, but I am. And there was a way in which during our photo taking that she allowed me to assert control over the situation, and I'm definitely in control of that image. And she was very happy kind of being in the passenger seat as a subject. And she loved these photographs, though, because I think she had always wanted to see herself as beautiful after the rape. And in her red lipstick and her pretty coat, she certainly was.
Did she find those photographs helpful? Do you think they helped her get some sense of recovery?
They did help her. She liked to be important, and she wanted someone to listen to her. And I think that with photography, that's one of the most, you know, the most wonderful things about taking someone's photograph, is that you sit with them for a little while and you focus your camera on them, and it gives them a moment to, even if it's not in words, express who they are and to be seen. And after my sister was raped, she needed nothing more in the world to feel alive and seen. And I know that the photographs helped her sort of recover herself in that way, her image, if you will.
And because you were working together, she had the opportunity to write about those as well and perhaps enhance the recovery effect.
Yeah, you know, also, we spent a lot of time hiking around the woods while we were taking these photographs, as ridiculous as that sounds, being that we were in these long skirt-like coats. So for somebody to see them, it's completely hilarious if they could see us tromping through the woods like that in the snow in our coats. But my sister was able to reclaim the forest because of that. She loved hiking. She loved swimming. She loved being outdoors. And her rapist had kind of taken that from her. But being photographed there in those spaces, that helped her feel as if they were hers again.
Do you have days when you wish you could stop the story there?
Every day. Although I will say, and it's taken me many years, that I wouldn't change what happened. because here I am at the end of this story. I have a beautiful daughter. She's 18 months old. I have a loving husband. I have a life, and I have a life outside of twinship. And I didn't necessarily need to lose Kara to have that life, but the one that I have is so important and so full of goodness that I can only look at it and think, it's what I should have. It's what I was supposed to have.
In some ways, that started to become yours with the journey you began after her death, which was when, 6 or 7 years ago, you got a phone call saying that she was gone?
Yeah. My sister died on June 13th in 2006, and I had been driving in the city in Manhattan, and I looked down in my lap, and I saw my mother's phone number flash on the panel of my phone, and I looked at it, and I handed it to my ex-husband, and I said, Kara has died. You have to answer the phone. And he looked at me like I was crazy, and he answered the phone, and he was very quiet, and I realized that I was right, that she had died.
It was a heroin overdose. Did you ever find out whether it was intentional?
It was definitely an accident. She had she'd actually had a lot in front of her at that moment. She was going to teach at Williams College for the summer, and she had actually talked to my mom a lot about getting sober, but she had some heroin in her possession that was laced with fentanyl, which during the months of that summer was going all around the country, this particular heroin, and it killed, I think, about 1,000 people. It was such a strong dose. It wasn't survivable.
We haven't talked about this. Do you have a copy of your book with you?
I do, yeah.
There's really quite a beautiful passage. It starts on page 168, I think. It's right about that time. It starts, "The morning after Kara died, she came back."
Oh, yeah.
Would you mind reading that for us?
Sure. Is that in the galley that you have?
It's a good thing this is taped, isn't it?
Yeah, sorry.
That's fine. I'm wondering if it's on 158. That's my mistake.
Got it. The morning after Kara died, she came back. I hallucinated her in my kitchen. Kara wore baggy blue pajamas cuffed at the wrists. She sat with her ankles crossed on the floor in front of the wood stove beneath an open window. She had helped herself to coffee. She stirred it with a teaspoon. The soft clink of silver against porcelain, the bell with which she'd summoned me. She looked just as she always had in the mornings, messy-haired, her face pillow and blanket creased. I fell to my knees before her in thanks, rested my head in her lap. She'd returned to me, just as we'd both promised. When we were girls, we'd made a pact. If one of us died first, a sign should be given from beyond, a gesture to say we'd made it, we were safe. A flick of a light switch, a vase pushed from the mantel, a door blown open, a ringing phone. A visit must be paid. That was the rule.
It's a moment you'll never forget, isn't it?
It is a moment that I'll never forget. And when I'd woken up that morning, I was certain that I hadn't dreamed it. And in that chapter, my sister tells me that she wants to be scattered in Venice. Her ashes need to be scattered in Venice. And I thought, I can't cremate you. I can't destroy your body. But I considered it, and I said, okay, I'll do that. And then about 2 months later, I opened up one of her diaries, and inside it said, in Venice, I had the most amazing time with Krista. We'd gone there on vacation. And if I ever die, I'd like to be scattered there. And I knew then that I had to do it, and that maybe that was both a dream and a sort of reality.
One of the things we haven't talked at all about, although I guess we've hinted at it, is a statistic that must have grabbed you and worried you almost to death. You write that 50% of twins follow their identical twin in dying within 2 years. And that almost happened to you?
It nearly happened to me. I nearly overdosed on drugs several times. I attempted suicide several times. I actually was in a terrible car accident. I was hit by a dump truck, and that had nearly killed me. And I was determined to follow my sister into death. I didn't know where else to go. I really didn't. And I had read the statistic one night while I was having a very sleepless night. I had gone and done what people should probably never do, which was Google what happens to a twin when their twin dies. And I had read a study that said identical twins died 0.53% of the time in a 2-year period after they'd lost their identical twins. And it took me, you know, it took me probably about 4 years and not 2 to realize that I was going to survive. And I'd had a moment with my sister, actually, while she was alive, where we were driving. We were on our way to take a photograph. And she looked at me and she said, "If you die, I will kill myself." And I looked at her and I said, "If you die, I will survive you." And I kind of kept that mantra in my mind as I went along, knowing that I wasn't going to go in the same place, no matter how hard I'd pushed myself in that direction. I knew that there must be something on the other side that I could find meaning in and a new life.
When did you know that you were going to be able to live up to that? Was there a moment when you started to see, what, the light in the distance, the hill start to change direction?
It was writing the book, really. I had sat down to write this book, and I had all of my sister's papers out before me, all of her pieces of writing. And, you know, I had suffered a lot in trauma. My memory had gone. I couldn't remember what had happened to us as girls. And I took my sister's writings during that time in our lives, and I cut them up and I put them on my floor. And then I wrote my own account of our childhood together, and I cut that up, and I put it on the floor. And then I rearranged those pieces until we had one story, which was one voice telling sort of what had happened to us as girls. And I allowed my sister to fill in for me what I couldn't remember. And it was at that moment that I understood that something really special was happening to me, which was that I was having a conversation with my sister, and she was kind of giving me my life back. She was giving me my memories back. And there was something that felt so spiritual about that to me, so moving. I felt as if my sister was kind of instructing me, telling me that if I just went through this, that somehow I was going to make it out on the other side.
And in a sense, you are now, this sounds awful, in a sense, you're living for both of you. It's a healthy whole now.
Yeah, I'm definitely living for me. But I think the caveat of living for me is that I've also brought her along with me.
You are remarried now. You have a lovely daughter, you've said. Do you see any of your sister in your daughter?
Oh, gosh. You know, that was one of the biggest fears I had when I was pregnant. I thought, please don't let this little Josephine look like Kara. And most people really want their children to look like them, you know. But since my sister and I look so much alike, I wasn't really thinking about whether Josephine was going to look like me. I was thinking about whether or not she was going to look like Kara. And I never wanted to put that kind of symbol on my daughter, the symbol of pain, the symbol of death. And I hadn't really figured out what I was going to do if she did look like Kara, but as it turns out, she looks exactly like my husband. She has blue eyes and blonde hair. And but I do see my sister's smile on Josephine's face, and I do recognize some of the joy that I've seen in family photographs. The joy that, you know, the joy of growing up and playing as twins. I see Josephine replicating that with her little friends, and it's much nicer than I thought it would be.
I can imagine. It sounds like you have, finally, a forward direction now. It's not just her anymore.
No, and really, I think the process of writing allowed me to separate myself from my sister. I was able to take something that had been hers, that I imagined had been hers in her life, and make it totally my own. And that helped reposition me. And I also think, you know, being a new mother has done that for me too. It's not just about writing. The process of giving birth, for example, that was a moment where I felt I decided to have an unmedicated birth, and that it was very physically and emotionally painful to go through. And as I was birthing my daughter Josephine, and I was in a state of wondering how on earth I was going to be able to make it through that pain, I closed my eyes and I imagined that my sister was with me. And as I touched my baby's head as she came out, Kara was also touching me. And she was with me there in a moment that felt utterly new to me. It was one that was positive and that was ushering in life instead of looking back and thinking about her death.
I can't think of any better way to end the conversation. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Really quite marvelous.
Oh, thanks so much.
it was very nice to talk to you. Thanks for coming in to do this with us.
It was fantastic to talk with you. Thank you. And thank you for talking me through that. Those are difficult things to talk about.
Yes. Oh, I can imagine.
It's amazing how freshly painful some of them can feel.
Oh, I'll bet.
Yeah.
Without question.
Yeah.
Well, listen, thanks again and best of luck to you.
Yes, and you too. Thanks.
Give your daughter a hug for me.
Oh, I will. Lots of them.
Okay.
Bye-bye.